Welcome to the Arizona Talks podcast. Today we're talking about the economics of cannabis. Our sponsors for this episode are The Mint Dispensary, Soulflower Wellness, Smart and Safe Arizona, Rebel Rock, Baked Bros, Bianchi, Brandt and Hale, Dispot, and Proteus 420. Intro to Cannabis by Derek Espinoza, Director of Education for Baked Bros.
So I grew up in Mesa, Arizona, in a
conservative Mormon community where cannabis, alcohol, coffee, tea were not acceptable. And my dad worked for the media, and my mom worked for a major pharmaceutical company. So when it came to alternative medicine and to drugs, the answer was pretty simple. Just say no. Now, I started to see when I was a senior in high school, some of my family members struggle with chronic illnesses, a lot of the things that we're seeing cannabis used for today. And at that time, I thought, there's got to be a better way. When I was in my 20s, I started to have my own personal health crisis, and so I sought out cannabis, and that's when I began using it. Now, today, I'm a senior at ASU, so, you know, this school. I helped found the Ecstasis Club, which works with students for sensible drug policy to raise awareness about altered states of consciousness. Thank you. And I work full-time as a cannabis educator for Baked Bros, and I'm also a husband and father of two little girls who I absolutely love. So, thank you. You guys are very, very kind. My goal is to become a doctor, and I want to use cannabis as one of the tools in my toolkit. And I'm telling you all this because this is often a story, and many others just like mine, that we don't hear or consider when talking about people who consume cannabis. And I'm going to kind of paint a picture of how that came to be and what the future might look like. So cannabis is one of the oldest cultivated plants that we know of. Its use goes back probably to 10,000 BC in China when it was used for food and for textiles. Now, cannabis seed actually has a complete amino acid profile. It's high in protein. It also has the ideal ratio of omega-3 to omega-6 fatty acids. Cannabis fibers are one of the strongest, most durable fibers that we know of, which makes it ideal for textiles. Now, because it was such a useful plant, it spread throughout the rest of Asia and Europe, places like India, Russia, the Middle East, and eventually into Africa by way of Egypt. It was very prevalent, and during this time, people started to uncover its psychoactive and therapeutic properties as well. Things were looking good, and it was used for thousands of years, but that started to change. So in Western society, cannabis was typically used in the common era for just rope and for food, and its medical value wasn't something that was really known about. And that changed when Dr. William O'Shaughnessy, in 1833, traveled to India. There, he started to notice that cannabis was being used for things like pain. It was used as a calming agent, antispasmodic, as well as a variety of other things. This created a lot of interest in the plant, and doctors and drug makers in the U.S. and in Europe started to use cannabis products. As you can see, I mean, you know, American cannabis full extract. It was something that was pretty common. For a time, cannabis medicine was alive and well, but that started to change in the 20th century. What was going on was that cannabis textiles were actually starting to threaten conventional nylon and paper industries. At that same time, alcohol prohibition had just ended, and then the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, the head of it, was Harry Anslinger, and he needed a new drug to attack since alcohol wasn't available, and marijuana fit the bill. You see, he had a personal vendetta against minorities, jazz music, and substance use, all of which centered around cannabis. At this time, recreational cannabis was primarily found amongst Mexican immigrants and jazz artists. So he got together with a lot of other powers that be, and they created this new campaign against a drug called marijuana, which most people had never heard of. They were saying things like it turned Mexicans into savage murderers, that it caused white women to sleep with black men. It was a plant with its roots in hell. Now, in that 1937, they passed the Marijuana Tax Act, which effectively made cannabis illegal to possess or to cultivate. And the American Medical Association actually at the time tried to fight the measure because they felt that it would take away their ability to use cannabis, which it did. And it was in the shadows until 1960s when recreational use started to come up again. It was in 1964 that Dr. Raphael Mishulam, who's up here at the top, discovered an isolated THC, which opened a whole new door to cannabis research. and things were starting to look up. But in 1970, President Richard Nixon signed into law the Controlled Substances Act, which effectively made cannabis a Schedule I drug, meaning it had no medical value and a high potential for abuse. Now in 1972, Nixon put together the Schaefer Commission to finally put a stamp that marijuana was bad. Well, what happened was the Schaefer Commission came back, and they actually let them know that cannabis is just as safe as alcohol, and we recommend removing it from Schedule I. But that didn't happen. Now, this narrative continued to go on, and in 1980, President Ronald Reagan famously said that he had evidence that one joint could do as much brain damage as being next to a nuclear bomb site. Now, the study he was referring to was actually done in rhesus monkeys, and what they did was they effectively suffocated them with cannabis smoke. So long story short, lack of oxygen causes brain damage, not cannabis. Today, we have 11 states that have legalized recreational cannabis. We have 33 that have medical cannabis, and the rest of the country has access to hemp, which is just cannabis with little to no THC. And that's because of the 2018 Farm Bill. Now, it seems like cannabis is alive and well, again, but there's still some common myths. So the first one I want to talk about is the myth that cannabis is a gateway to other drugs. And this is something that actually, you know, potential presidential candidate Joe Biden just mentioned, that it was a gateway drug. first of all, there's no conclusive evidence that cannabis is a gateway to other drugs. And when you ask high school seniors, particularly in one study, whether or not they use cannabis as their first drug, you find that 54% alcohol was their first drug that they used. 32% said it was tobacco, and only 14% was cannabis. The next myth is that alcohol is safer than cannabis. But every year, 88,000 Americans die from alcohol-related causes. Many of those are from alcohol-related overdoses. No one to date has died from a cannabis-related overdose. In terms of society, researchers have actually found that alcohol is the most dangerous drug in terms of societal harm. And this is because its use is prevalent in violent crime, domestic violence, and sexual assault. The third myth is that cannabis has no medical value. But in 2018, Epidiolex was approved by the FDA, which is a cannabis-containing drug, for use in children with severe forms of epilepsy. Also, Sativex, which is made by the same company, has been approved in Europe for treating cannabis-related pain as well as muscle spasms in MS patients. And lastly, we have Marinol, which is a synthetic form of THC, which has been approved by the FDA since 1985. And lastly, the last myth is that cannabis users are druggies, they're stoners, they're potheads, they're hippies, etc. These are all extremely harmful stereotypes, just like any other stereotype out there. And most cannabis consumers, many of which are probably in this room, just don't meet that perception. And while their portrayal in the media is often comical, this is a stigma that just needs to be left behind. Now today, cannabis is used in a variety of ways. We have people who consume cannabis flowers by smoking them, vape its essential oils, eat infused edibles, and lather on topicals. It truly is the wild, wild west of consumer goods with minimal research, regulation, and oversight from healthcare. In terms of cannabis research, there's been over 30,000 studies published on cannabis, many of which have focused on the harms around cannabis. And there are still barriers to by the federal government to studying the benefits of cannabis. The National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine in 2017 did a study looking at all the data, and their conclusion was that we still have a lot of work to do until we can really draw any strong conclusions. The future of cannabis. Projections of cannabis sales continue to grow every single year as access to the plant expands. The cannabis industry is growing at a rapid rate as opportunity continues to unfold. We need research in areas of minor cannabinoids, terpenes, and flavonoids, which are all present in the plant and don't get enough attention. And lastly, we need the endocannabinoid system, which is a key regulatory system within the body, to be integrated into our existing medical paradigm. Thank you.